When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro potting soil, just $8.97, for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro potting soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com.
And I'm Ben Bullen. I hang out with everybody's favorite auto editor.
It's already started. Moose and squirrel.
The moose and the squirrel.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay, so go ahead, hit us with this topic, because this is something that you were all jazzed up about, and when I saw it, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it does.
I can't believe it.
It looks like it's fake, or it looks like it's Photoshopped.
It does. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look real to me. This whole thing doesn't look real to me.
What we are talking about today are things that the Russians describe as ekranoplan, or ekranoplan, we would say, I guess. And Russians probably don't have that terrible accent.
I would hope not.
My Russian friends are going to write in
ben
on that.
Ben told me to be ready for this one.
So yeah, sorry. Yeah. So these are very curious vehicles. The Russian word for it, ekran means screen and plan means plane. So it's like screen plane, but think of it more like ground plane, I guess.
Ground plane. Okay.
Would be an easier way, which seems a bit contradictory.
A ground plane, a plane that flies on the ground.
Yes. Now, you know, Scott, you and I had, things got a little bit heated between us. There was some tension when we talked about flying cars, which I'm not bringing up.
Sure.
So I thought about, hey, what about flying boats? Let's see how our resident auto expert feels about that.
Flying boats.
These things, they look like planes. They look like planes with, no landing gear and propellers in the wrong places.
This is really bizarre. Mm-hmm. And you know what, to me, when I saw an ekranoplane for the first time, when you mentioned these, and if I mispronounce this throughout here, I think I say it three or four different ways, but
yeah.
When I saw one of these, you know what I initially thought of?
What's that?
The Spruce Goose.
Oh, yes.
I thought of the Spruce Goose because that's the proportion that you think of when you see these things. These are enormous planes. Well, really, it's a flying boat.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
Yeah.
And that's what the Spruce Goose really ended up being.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be military transport, but one flight, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the Spruce Goose, the Hercules, that was huge. I mean, it was how big was that? That was 218 feet long. Mm-hmm. I think it had a 320-foot wingspan. It was like 80 feet tall. That was a Spruce Goose.
It was a monster.
It was big, and it's in a museum somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. These ekranoplans, they're bigger than that.
Yes. And Scott, I'm going to do us both a favor, because I can't keep up my fake offensive Russian accent.
Mm-hmm.
Let's call them ground effect vehicles.
Okay.
You want to do that?
Yeah.
A little bit easier.
Yeah.
And easier for me, at least. it'll get rid of all these bad Russian jokes.
Okay, you're great.
Okay, so yes, the scale of these things is huge, and you could kind of attribute it to two reasons. First, for the way the way that ground effect works enables engineers to make things that are basically similar to planes without some of the same engineering concerns that would restrict the size of a plane normally.
Okay. So that, how does ground effect work then?
Excellent question. I'm so glad you asked. Okay, so a ground effect vehicle works off of something that's incredibly strange that I did not know about until we started researching this podcast. If you're flying just a regular aircraft, mm-hmm. regular winged aircraft, there's something weird that happens when you get very close to the ground. The lift increases into an extraordinary level. Because when the aircraft is flying low, the body of the aircraft and the wings trap air between the wings and the ground. And so it builds, if it has a large enough surface area, it has almost this cushion of air, similar to a hovercraft.
Interesting.
Not quite a hovercraft, but similar to, you know what I mean?
So there's lift on a just as you're setting a plane down, there's lift on a plane that holds it off of the ground.
Just a bit.
Yeah, clearly I'm not a pilot.
Not with the way a conventional plane is designed. Mm-hmm. This ground effect doesn't have. It's not maximized.
Okay, you know, got it. It's maximized in these vehicles.
Right.
Understood.
And in this way, they can lift huge amounts of stuff without near as much effort as one would think.
Well, as evidenced by the size of these things, because just mm-hmm. the plane itself, or the boat, or whatever you want to call it, these look really, really odd. I mean, they've got, if you want to just describe what it looks like, because people hopefully search these out and find what an acronoplan looks like, but it looks like a warship with very stubby wings on the front.
Yeah.
The jets are way up front, but it has a big tail like a aircraft would, a huge tail, as a matter of fact. But the weird thing is they fly. They really do fly. They're not on the water, really.
Mm-hmm.
They're just above the water. So they're extremely high speed, extremely low altitude.
Mm-hmm.
They look like a plane, but it looks like the wings are chopped off about halfway of where they should be.
Yeah.
It looks like the wingspan should be much, much bigger, but I guess they don't need quite as much lift. I don't know.
No, see, I've been thinking about how we're going to describe these on our audio podcast, right?
Yeah.
You guys should go and check out the pictures of it. It's worth your time. They're really, really cool, weird looking things.
And videos. You can watch videos of them in action too, which is really cool.
Which I didn't believe at first when I saw one of them.
Yeah, they're nuts.
So this is the way I figured that would be the best I could do to describe it. You know how when two dogs of very different breeds have a litter.
Yeah.
And you see a mutt walking around. You're like, where did that tail come from?
Yeah,
where did
sure.
that head come from?
Sure.
This looks like it's one of those situations that, part plane, part boat, like an amphibious plane, right?
Yeah.
And then a jumbo jet somehow had a plane baby.
Yeah. It kind of does look like
because
this.
The tail is, the tail of the, of most of these ground effect vehicles is out of proportion. To the wings.
It's enormous.
Yeah, the tail looks like it's designed for a much larger plane, and it would be if it was a conventional plane. And then the turbines we're talking about here are, in many cases, in several cases, they're almost adjacent to the cockpit.
Yeah, and there's many of them.
Yes.
There's more than you would find on a plane.
There's like eight.
Eight huge jet engines on these things. They're enormous. Well, because they have to carry so much weight and have to develop speed on water, take off, land. You know, there's a lot to this. So when were these things built? I mean, like what was the purpose of them? Why were they even around? Cause I don't see these around. What's the point of an acronoplan?
All right, Scott, journey back with me. I still don't have our real time machine fixed. So journey back with me on our audio podcast time machine, if you will. Because acronoplans, ground effect vehicles, are by no means new technology. They date back to like the 30s, the 1930s.
The 1930s?
Yes, not the 1830s.
No. I mean, I had no idea. I thought they were much newer than that.
No, it's funny because, these things were, a lot of the research for this started in Northern Europe, and Soviet Russia really took an interest in these and decided to start building these, because at the time, they, despite some of their disadvantages, which we'll get into, you know, mm-hmm. just as vehicles, they have several enormous advantages at the time like the Cold War.
Okay. So what were they? What were the advantages?
They're much faster than conventional boats of the time.
Because they're not even in the water.
Right, right. And they can also transport much more than planes. So they're like much more than planes the way that a boat would, if that makes sense. Like a plane has to, even the Spruce Goose, if it ever made it into the air, right? But take a Boeing, for instance. Like a Boeing will be able to traverse the Atlantic, right? But a lot of that weight is going to have to go toward fuel. And
Because it has to gain altitude.
Right. Right.
Okay, because you're not going to 30,000 feet like a normal jet would be. You're going to 20 feet.
Right, right.
Okay.
20 feet.
20 feet?
No, I'm excited because we're about to talk about.
Oh, okay, good.
You know what I
mean? Oh, sure, yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry we're nerding out, guys.
Yeah, we are. These are cool.
But the third advantage at the time is that they're not easy to detect on radar.
Aha.
Because they're just so much faster.
There you go. There's your military aspect, right?
Right. These were definitely military vehicles for the Russians when they started, because during the Cold War era. Now, this doesn't mean that the Russians were the only people, or excuse me, not Russians, the Soviet government. It doesn't mean that the Soviets were the only people experimenting with these vehicles. But during the heyday of this construction, they were by far the most prolific manufacturers of these ground effect vehicles.
And for a time, we had no idea. Isn't that something? Yeah, here we are in the States, no idea this is going on, and they're building these enormous, enormous transport planes.
We cannot explain to you through your ears alone how big these things are.
Yeah.
We will try. Funny story. 1960s, you know, the U.S. in the Cold War, we've got spy satellites. We want to keep an eye on stuff. And we see this thing in the Caspian Sea, and it's in the Soviet Union. So, you know, we're already kind of in a gray area as far as
spying. I wonder what
goes.
That is. What's going on there?
Right. So it's huge. It's shaped like an airplane. It's just floating in the water. They can tell it's over 300 feet long.
Okay.
From, you know.
Over 300 feet long. Do you hear that? I mean, the Spruce Goose, what did I say that was? Spruce Goose was 218, so barely 200 feet mm-hmm. long. This is enormous.
Yeah. And then they noticed also, as soon as they had an engineer or someone with the Air Force look at it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or just anyone who's familiar with planes, they noticed those wings are way too short for this thing to fly.
Yeah, it'll never take off.
Did somebody just build a 300-plus feet long plane and then say, we screwed the wings up?
Yeah, let's just float it out in the Caspian Sea.
Float it out in the water. No, what they actually found was something called the Caspian Sea Monster.
Awesome.
Yeah? Like this one?
Oh, I do. I like the sound of that.
This thing can weigh over 500 tons. And thanks to the ground effect we mentioned earlier, it is able to still transport itself in the air 20 feet above the water. Mm-hmm. And with this discovery, the U.S. government realized that they had stumbled on the veritable tip of an iceberg.
Really?
Yes.
What else was out there?
Oh, man. Oh, brother. There were these things called Aurelionox. I am so sorry. I'm butchering.
Oh,
all
so
this
there's stuff. Gonna so you're gonna go through a whole list of other.
There were others.
Other
yeah,
cryoplanes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't just the one model.
No, it wasn't.
Because they had planned, from what I've read, they had planned something like 100 of these Caspian Sea Monsters to be built.
Yes.
And I think they backed that way down, and then I don't know if they ever built any more or not. I don't know how many are out there. I don't know if anybody knows how many are out there.
Well, yeah, there was some secrecy there. Oh, mm-hmm. We should add also the sea monster sounds like a behemoth, right?
Yeah.
Which it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was also a behemoth that could go 350 miles an hour.
350 miles an hour at, what do you say, 20 feet above the water?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you imagine?
Excuse me, 20 meters, 66 feet.
That had to felt so fast because you've got all of this, you've got all of the sensory input that you would have at ground level, basically.
Yeah.
In a plane going 350 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
That had to have been an unbelievable ride. I mean, you don't get that sensation when you're 30,000 feet up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
It's just nothing like that. So I can't imagine what that would have felt like. That would have been really cool.
Now, so it's weird that this kind of vehicle could have been, since the 30s, this idea first saw its prototypes and stuff, and then the government started tinkering with them before World War II, and then the Soviets continued through 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing how obscure these vehicles remain. A lot of people attribute the Soviet drive toward building these vehicles to a particular minister of defense at the time, a guy named Dmitry Ustinov. And when there might be some credence to that, because when that minister was no longer in office, he died in the mid-80s, passed away. The new minister of defense cut the program, the funding for it.
So this went on for quite a long time then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not too long ago, really.
No, not at all.
I know that I think the last one that I read about was that there was a crash in 93.
Mm-hmm.
That ended the whole program, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they said that what's odd about this crash is that they said that the entire tail section of one of these things broke off out at sea. It hit a wave and it snapped the tail section right off. So it must have been a heck of a wave to take that off. Mm-hmm. But it was still able to coast or to glide mm-hmm. onto shore. Cause these things can beach themselves. They can put themselves right up on the beach.
Yeah.
So for transport, military transport, as far as, tanks and crew,
mm-hmm.
extremely purpose built. Just seems like, it was the way to do it, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, to get them across a sea in a matter of minutes.
But Scott, that's an interesting thing that we should talk about too, because there's a huge implied question. We're dancing around an elephant in the studio.
Okay, what's that?
If these things are so fast and so cool and so efficient at moving cargo, then why aren't they around? Why aren't more around now?
My guess?
Your guess.
My guess? Oh, they're giant targets, one. If they're used for military applications, right?
Nice.
Yes. The other is that they're pretty much limited to water only, of course, because it's a flying boat. It's not, you're not going to be able to travel any great distance inland unless there's a ramp specifically made for that vehicle to fly on the land.
And certainly not safely.
Not safely, no. So yeah, I think maybe that's why.
Yeah,
advancements in radar that would be able to pick them up.
That's a big one, yeah.
I don't know. I guess I'm out.
I'm glad you're out because you had all the stuff I had. there is definitely a huge issue with stability because the ground effect relies on that distance between the ground and the wings. So if you are on a flat surface, a relatively flat surface, a smooth rolling surface, perhaps if it's not too extreme, mm-hmm. then your gravy, everything is good. I don't know how to say gravy in Russian. I'm sorry.
Mm, that's right.
But if you hit something that is uneven, like most land terrain or most terrain, I guess, then what you end up doing is disrupting the ground effect and therefore the stability of the vehicle.
Makes sense. So the distance between the bottom of the vehicle and the ground is ever changing.
Mm-hmm.
So is your lift.
Right. Like, so if you can drive a boat and you can pilot an airplane, you can do either one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of them will qualify you to drive one of these. It's just too much of a hybrid. I think it requires too much of the same work. So in addition to that accident you described, which did kill the program, The program had already been really cut down by the 80s. I mean, we've got that. That's 1993. We're getting post-Cold
War. Yeah, I don't know what it was. Maybe it was a demonstration or something. Mm-hmm. Who knows? But yeah, I know that was one of the last mentions of the thing flying anyways.
Yeah, they even back in the late 70s, they originally ordered – the Soviet Navy originally ordered over 100 – Orelionok. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Russian listeners.
That's
but
right.
They ordered over 100 of the most successful vehicle, which was much smaller than the Sea Monster. It was 125 tons. I hate that. Isn't that weird that our scale is so messed up now?
I know it.
Like, it's so much smaller.
Yeah.
It's only 125.
But that's gigantic still.
So they ordered over 100, but then they reduced it with down to 30.
Oh, okay.
And then out of those... a lot of them weren't – I don't think all of them were finished.
So ground air effect vehicles are still around.
Yes.
I mean, there's no doubt about that because you know what? I found a little YouTube video like I like to do.
Uh-huh.
Just take a little side note here.
Yeah.
Something called Universal Hovercraft makes – or a company called Universal Hovercraft makes something called the UH-19 XRW Hoverwing.
Mm.
And if you do a search on YouTube for that, you'll find it. But – this is a ground effect vehicle, and I thought, because I did a ground effect vehicle search.
Yeah.
And I was watching some of the really cool Chronoplan stuff, you know, and that's really neat. I mean, I like watching those too, but this is a new version. This is a sport version, I guess, for the weekend guy.
Yeah.
Who wants to fly one. This is really kind of weird. It looks like, you know, those hovercraft that you could buy years ago. I mean, even 15, 20 years ago, with the, I think it had a rubber skirt around the bottom. It looked like it did anyways, I think.
Did it have the big fan at the back?
No, the big fan is in the front.
Okay.
And there's an enclosed seating area. And maybe it did have a fan in the back now that I think about it. But it had wings. This thing has wings now.
All right.
And they show it on the water, putting around, you know, it's doing its thing on the water. And then it takes off. And this thing flies around 2, 4, maybe 6 feet off the water, and they're just flying over the surface of the lake all over the place. This weekend user of this
crazy
thing. Yeah, it's really, really neat. And it's not really fast or anything like that, but it can make a jump up to apparently 20 feet if you have to go over, you know, whatever you need to if something gets in your way. You know, they show it going over water. It's flying over water for a long, long period of time, and then it goes over a sandbar. So, you know, that didn't disturb it at all.
Yeah.
Goes, you know, right back over the water and then it lands. And they show two of them flying side by side. It's really a cool little demonstration of what's out there and what you can do. And apparently you only need a boater's license, I believe, to fly one of these because, you know, you're not filing flight plans or anything like
that. Right, right.
This is just flying on top of a lake a few feet off of the surface.
Mm.
But, it's a really interesting machine to watch in action. So, I was wondering, you know, like you had mentioned that they had built a lot of, well, different types of aircraft in the past. I mean, 30 or 40 of them that the military had ordered. What are the practical purposes of these things right now, or are there any practical purposes?
Well, that's funny that you mentioned that. It does have practical purposes, or it has maybe a better way to say is potential practical purposes. Different governments and industries around the world are trying to put some time into this ground effect industry. A lot of the focus is on building smaller civilian craft,
recreational craft, like what we're talking about, the one I just mentioned?
Mm-hmm,
okay.
Like, that's one. Then there's also the idea that you could maybe use them as super efficient ferries, like up in your native Great Lakes.
Oh, very good.
It'd be a pretty cool one.
Sure. Yeah, because that gets awful rough at times. I know if you were able to skim over top of that at high speeds, that'd be an unbelievable time saver.
Mm-hmm. And it would be, especially when you consider the speed in comparison to a typical ferry.
Well, and the weight that they can carry.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd be able to carry vehicles and cargo and people and everything and no problem at all.
Hmm. Yeah.
Not a bad idea.
There's also, for instance, in Australia and in Japan, they're looking at the principles of these things. Now, in Russia, which already has a manufacturing base for these vehicles, these manufacturers are trying to figure out how can we make this work worthwhile. Well,
of course.
Right. And so one of their ideas have been to create, to keep making heavier vehicles for, heavy transport, for cargo transport.
Well, okay.
Which if you think about it, that's one of the military advances. So it sort of translates well into, industry. But of course, you know, one of my favorite hobby horses, who do you think is leading the way on ground air vehicles right now? Ground effect vehicles.
I'm going to guess, China.
You are absolutely right.
I am, really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Whereas if you didn't already have so many blue ribbons and gold stars.
Right. Yeah, I'd pin one on myself right now. Mm-hmm. Good job.
So they being China, or the Chinese government and military, as well as business, sees a lot of potential for ground effect vehicles. And they've been designing prototypes for some time. And they are actually using these vehicles. They're flying Australian and Chinese craft in China.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Huh.
For a variety of purposes. But in response to your question, I guess, my long-winded answer to summarize, right? If you're thinking it's too long, didn't read material. The reason that these people in different governments and positions and businesses are trying to, sort of advocate the use of these vehicles is that potentially, despite their disadvantages, they could be a very efficient mode of transportation. As a matter of fact, some people say that, the fuel efficiency of an aircraft is less than that of a ground effect vehicle.
Hmm.
And I'm not.
Well, it doesn't. Yeah. Like we said, it doesn't have to deal with the lift, and it doesn't have to climb to 20,000 feet or 30,000 feet like an aircraft does. It stays low, uses less fuel, may carry more weight, but, you know, it's a straight shot wherever you're going.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Hopefully. Yeah. You know what? I was thinking about this, you know, before this and some of the uses that it may have. And I read this somewhere, but, as a sea rescue vessel.
Perfect. Yeah.
Because the speed, you'd be able to get to a sinking craft as quick as a plane could. You know, at those speeds, you're talking, you can get to, instead of, let's say that you dispatch a boat to go to another sinking boat.
Mm-hmm.
That boat can maybe get, 40 knots?
Yeah.
At best.
Yeah, if it's
especially if it's high speed, or high seas, much, much less. But if you're in in one of these chronoplanes, you may be able to, you know, who knows? I'm guessing 200 miles an hour? You can fly right out to the scene, have people on the scene relatively quickly.
Well within
much, much faster. Yeah. Tourism is a possibility, I suppose.
Absolutely.
I mean, who wouldn't want to be able to just take off from the coast of Florida and taking a chronoplane at, 20 feet above the ocean for, I don't know how many hours it would take still, but you could shoot over to Africa or you could go wherever you want.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you could reach it via the coast. Another thing would be, of course, military applications we talked about. And then one last thing is the cargo that we mentioned. You know how they ship vehicles here?
Yeah.
I mean, how many freighters and just enormous freighters it takes.
Cargo ships.
I don't know what speed those things are traveling at, but, can you imagine being able to ship a load of cars, you know, within a couple of hours from coast to coast, you know, from country to country? That'd be amazing. I mean, you know, you couldn't take as many.
Yeah, probably not as many because those cargo ships are powerhouses. But for a certain range of cargo, it would appear that these vehicles could really change the game.
There's something to it. I mean, they've been around a long, long time, but it seems like we're just not using them to the full potential.
Well, one of the reasons that that I've heard proposed for the sort of decrease in interest in these vehicles has been that after World War II, after the Cold War ended, there was less interest in that type of military hardware and more of our interest, world militaries, as we see, more of our interest is involving things like monitoring, telecommunications, how to distribute information, how to fight asymmetrically.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of having a large, bulky ship, right, and having these concentrated on the ground forces has been addressed by several things, at least in our military. For instance, the U.S. military, they're already large. You know, we have 11 aircraft carriers, mm-hmm. you know, and they might take a while to get to you, but oh, buddy. Once they get there, yeah, they and
more than adequate,
right? So the question is, the question always for this kind of R&D is, where is our money best spent? Mm-hmm. And it seems like it would appear that spending R&D to research the best ground effect vehicle has lost priority to some other research. And I'm not saying that this other research is better or worse. It was just a decision made that is pretty understandable, because this technology is relatively risky in that it hasn't been explored near as often. We don't have a long, thorough case history of accidents with these vehicles the way we would have with planes or cars or even boats. And one thing that you don't like if you're spending billions of dollars, right, is
to invest in the unknown.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be awful dangerous.
You might as well buy an hour with a psychic and say, hey, what do you think I should do?
Right.
But and no offense to anyone who believes in psychics or considers themselves one. But the story here, well, the way we have to end it now is just to say that, Scott, I think it's fair to say we're not completely sure what's going to happen with this technology. I mean, it could, we see that there's a lot of research. There's definitely potential for this to be a rich man's toy, mm-hmm. at the very least. But the idea of high seas rescue, is enormously important.
Sure. Yeah, it's intriguing. And I think that, it looks like old technology. It is old technology, but, with the advancements that are being made, who knows where this could go?
Yeah. And I especially love when we get to take a look at something that, is so amazing that my number one surprise is I've never heard of it, mm-hmm. Like Zorbing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, as a result, this stuff, I would not be surprised if it's going to be possible to take a ride on a ground effect vehicle sometime in our lifetimes. So
I think it's possible right now. It's just you got to be in the right area, the right time. It's just not accessible to everybody all the time, and hopefully it will be.
That's another thing. Yeah, that's definitely why it can't really replace a plane, a boat, or a car.
Accessibility.
Yeah.
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 It's
tough. We can't take them into work here in inland Atlanta, Georgia.
Unless they make a lot of canals.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Well, yeah, I just
did you read my letter to the editor?
I just saw your eyes light up, yeah.
No, I just like canals, that's all.
Okay.
So I guess I feel like if we went too much into this, I'm sorry.
I don't know, because I mean, check out the videos of Chronoplans online. Mm-hmm. They're really cool. So, and the photos, definitely look at the photos. Mm-hmm. Worthwhile.
And send us photos, or let us know if you've seen one in real life, if you've been fortunate enough to have ridden in one. I personally would love to hear from you. You can find us at Facebook, and you can find us on Twitter, or CarStuffHSW. You can also see our blog, and you probably know we work for a website called HowStuffWorks.com. If you want to send us an email with a story about Kradlblans or anything else that you think is particularly fascinating.
One last time, you had to do it, didn't you?
I did one last time.
All right, send it to carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful fingersticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch, so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.